This is Jim Engster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Our topic today is primarily tourism and what is impacting it. Billy Nungesser, the Lieutenant Governor, will be with us in a few moments, and then we'll be joined later in the hour by Paul Arrigo, celebrating his final day as head of Visit Baton Rouge after 20 years at the helm, 25 years at the VBR Group, which was once under another name, but arose by any other name, is still arose. And Billy Nungesser has watched Paul Arrigo do his thing, and I'm sure he'll have some thoughts about the departure of the man from Brother Martin and the University of New Orleans who came to Baton Rouge and now has logged, I think, as many years in Baton Rouge as he did in his home city of New Orleans. But I do want to remind our listeners, and I suspect you've heard this morning, that this is the fall member fest beginning, and it is falling for WRKF as the theme, because you made WRKF what it is today. 42 years for two-thirds of the life of William Harold Nungesser, our Lieutenant Governor. WRKF has been standing proud at 89.3 on the dial. If you're already a donor, you can do your part to share with us a contribution, and we'd love to hear from you in a tangible way. You can pick up the phone at 855-893-9753, 855-893-9753, or go to WRKF.org. And there is an orange ceramic morning edition bowl, $10 a month, $120 a year. That is yours if you make a contribution this hour, and I think throughout the day. So we hope to hear from you if we've not already done so, and it's always a pleasure to hear from many of you a few times during the year, and only a few times during the year do we come to you and ask for your support. And this is one of those times. Again, 855-893-9753. Billy Nungesser, good morning to you, Lieutenant Governor.
Good morning, my friend. How you doing on this cool morning?
Doing well. It feels good, and I'm glad we didn't get a hurricane.
I am. I tell you, our hearts and go out to the people of Florida. I reached out to the Lieutenant Governor over there as it was approaching, and I know Louisiana is sending a lot of help over there because we know too much how much help you can use after these things, and we're sorry for their devastation, but we're so glad it didn't hit Louisiana.
Well, Billy Nungesser, as we know, grew up on politics. His dad was the Republican Party chair when the GOP was still meeting in phone booths, the entire party. But he inherited the flame from Billy Nungesser, number one. And he also, as we know, the son became head of Plaquemines Parish and has faced a hurricane or two. And the National Hurricane Center this year said it was going to be the worst ever. What the heck happened? Their forecast was dead wrong.
Yeah, I tell you, weathermen are the only ones that could be wrong so many times and still keep their job. But we're glad they were wrong this year. You know, I think if this hurricane, we wouldn't have seen that cold front and that thing came across the Gulf gaining strength, I think we might have seen the first Category 6, which there's no such thing, hurricane. So we were very fortunate that cold front pushed it into Florida, and things changed around on this storm. But you're right, they just didn't develop. I don't know if it was that dust coming off Africa or the current steering them up the East Coast or out to sea. But whatever it is, I hope we can have that for many more years to come, because we surely need a break for a long period of time to rebuild our coast.
And the damage to certain parts of Florida is immense. It is something we faced, and there's no great pleasure in seeing another state go through this. And this storm, Hurricane Ian, it's like, what, the fourth strongest ever to hit the Gulf, and now it's headed for South Carolina. It is an amazing storm. It reminds me of Hurricane Andrew, which went to Florida, came to Louisiana, and went back to Florida.
Yeah, we know that they are getting stronger, and they're getting stronger quicker. You know, that usually when that thing gets in the Gulf, it may gain one or two categories. Now you're seeing them go from a 1 to a 3 and a 4 overnight because of the warmth of that water and the fuel that it puts out there. So we're going to have to be better prepared. And I tell everybody, we've got to come up with some plans in Louisiana, because waiting for FEMA to get here quickly doesn't always materialize in a timely manner. So unfortunately, we've seen enough to be prepared, but we can always do better.
What would you do?
Well, I think we've got to look at what I'm trying to do with the state parks. I'm looking for a private-public partner to build some small cabins on trailers. And during good times, we rent those out, move them around when there are special events in the area to handle the overbookings that we see at our parks. In times of emergency, we would move them north of I-10, but move them back to a park closest to where people were devastated. So the people are close to where the devastation was to go to work on their homes or rebuild in those communities. You know, we were driving 3 hours back to Lake Charles for weeks back and forth because there was no power. Same thing along the coast. You know, we turned our state park in Grand Isle into a trailer park so mm-hmm. people could get down there quickly. We could do that using all of our state parks to be able to have at least to get back quickly. And for every day you don't get back, people don't come back. So I learned that in Plaquemines Parish, as quickly as you can get the schools open and get people back to somewhat normalcy. But I think we can get some large groups of camps that we can mobilize to help our people in the interim getting a FEMA trailer.
We're visiting with Billy Nungesser, 877-217-5757. And Holly in the Garden District, who hears you on this show once a month, says you have been very kind to a political foe in Governor Edwards. He's from a different party. You were the only Republican elected official statewide not to go to those Trump rallies a few years ago. But you have been at odds with the governor, and for that matter, Garrett Graves, a congressman from Baton Rouge, about this coastal plan. We've talked about it before, but Holly says, have you had an epiphany on this? Or are you still steadfastly against the plan?
Well, here's what I want to do. I want to spend the BP money to give us the best protection in the shortest amount of time. This diversion cannot build land above the waterline. Cannot. So it's not going to lower storm surge. It's not going to lower your insurance rates. And this 50-year plan was dreamed up way back when Bobby was governor. Does anybody look at this hurricane? Does anybody think we need a 50-year plan? I think we need to rethink a 3 to 5 year plan, pump river sediment, build berms, ridges, and islands, lower storm surge to our coast, let the small diversions nourish the marsh we have left. To think this thing is going to build any land, it's not going to happen. It's not going to give us any storm protection. Plus, the studies show it's going to wipe out the dolphins. Now, why is the dolphin important? It's a canary in a coal mine. When it dies, everything below it, it will destroy our seafood industry. Their own reports say irreversible damage to the seafood industry. But people miss that because they're spending millions advertising that this is going to save oil. I just want what's best for the coast. Why would you change the Marine Mammal Act at 11 o'clock at night and monitor what it's going to do to the wildlife for 5 years instead of knowing up front after you spend $2 billion? That's not good. That's not money well spent. You should know the damage up front. And they've already spent a couple $100 million on consultants and, you know, follow the money. This is not the best thing for Louisiana. It's not good politically for me to be against it. But I know in my heart it's the right thing to do for our seafood industry and for our coast. Mm-hmm. We could do better to protect our coast with that money now, not in 50 years.
877-217-5757. We will talk about crime, but the governor, Lieutenant Governor, earlier this month, you were front and center when LSU played Florida State in the Superdome, and I know tomorrow you're involved in a way with the LSU-Auburn game at Auburn tomorrow night. What's going on there?
Yeah, I've challenged the Lieutenant Governor to sign up as many people, both LSU and Auburn fans, to be an organ donor. When we went out to do the Rose Parade, I met some incredible people from Louisiana that had a float in that parade with organ donors that are alive today because of organ donors. And they were there with the pictures of the ones that they received the organ for, and it just touched my heart. And so I came back from that parade last year and got involved in a big way to encourage everyone to be organ donors. And so far, we've signed up 180 85 LSU fans to Auburn's 24. I hope that's the score of the game. But we've challenged, and there's a personal story there where a young man who unfortunately passed away and a young boy from LSU received the heart. So they go to the game together, those two families. They will be there to encourage people to sign up. And it saved a lot of people's lives, and we continue to do so and encourage everyone to be an organ donor.
877-217-5757 for Billy Nungesser. We're going to take a short pause, and we will return with another segment with the Lieutenant Governor, and we will go to the phone lines. There are a few people waiting in line. And a reminder that we would like to hear from you. This is the Fall Member Fest campaign, and either go to WRKF.org to show your support, or you can give us a call and get in and out in fewer than 89.3 seconds by calling 855-893-9753. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing your number 877-217-5757, another segment with Lieutenant Governor William Harold, Billy Nungesser, Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Patricia, you're first up. Good morning.
Good morning. So I don't know if you're aware of Together New Orleans, but they have a community lighthouse project they're promoting to bring solar hubs to provide power after a hurricane at churches and community centers. And I was wondering if you think it would be a good idea to expand that beyond New Orleans.
I have heard about that project, and I think it's a great project. And I think it would be a great idea to expand that, where you can know there's places you can go that have power after a storm for the churches. You know, way back, and I forget the year we did it, we were able to get FEMA to finally accept churches that give out food and provide shelter to where they can be reimbursed from FEMA, because showing the importance of them after a storm, the faith-based community is invaluable. So I think absolutely, I think it's a great program, and I'd love to see it expanded to other areas of the state, because we know those storms go way inland. You know, we had the first hurricane to hit the shore and leave North Louisiana as a hurricane, doing damage all the way up through North Louisiana. So it definitely would be a great program to expand around the state. Great idea.
David in Atlanta. Hello, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. Governor, in Naples, Florida, in Fort Myers, I understand there are no shortage of million-dollar homes. Yet, I just read in the New York Times, less than 20% of the residents have flood insurance. Now, if you're going to be a responsible homeowner, and if you can afford a million-dollar home, I think it's incumbent upon you to be responsible and pay for flood insurance, because by you not paying for it, it makes other people, there, like in Louisiana, for example, flood insurance is skyrocketing, like it is all over the country.
All right. Your thoughts. Thank you, David. Governor? What about flood insurance? Is that a good idea?
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, they changed the law. You know, if you remember in Braithwaite in Plaquemines Parish, everybody got their homes rebuilt after Katrina. We got flooded again. They didn't realize they changed the law. If they didn't have flood insurance, they didn't get rebuilt after Katrina. So you are required to have it. And you don't get reimbursed. You know, we talk about it, but we really need a national disaster policy that everyone has to have. And if you're in California, it's for the fires, tornadoes, floods. So it's something that we need to push to make sure it's across the whole country, because these rain events are happening in Nebraska and Kentucky. It's not just along the coast where people are flooding. So we need to have our congressional delegation to really push hard to make that mandatory across the country, and it surely would bring down the rates here in Louisiana. He's absolutely right.
Okay. It's been 2 weeks now since Allison Rice, the 21-year-old LSU student, was killed. The murder still unsolved, and in Baton Rouge and New Orleans are right at the top of the list for murders per capita in the U.S. New Orleans is your hometown. You work in Baton Rouge. How much is crime a deterrent to, a detriment to tourism? What is the connection, if any?
Well, it's a huge connection, and I'll tell you this. We get more letters, emails, calls, people saying they're not coming back to New Orleans. than bragging about the French Quarter, and that's not a good thing. And that trend's got to be reversed quickly. We will see conventions and conferences and meetings. Look, it's no secret. People, locals, don't venture down in the Quarter anymore unless they're going down there to eat at one of the nice restaurants and get out. We've got to save the Quarter. But also in Baton Rouge, well, you know, we always react after one of these horrible killings. We got to keep the bad people in jail. I don't care if you're 17 or 70. If you've got a gun and you've used it, you need to be locked up until you're rehabilitated, however long that takes. You can't just let them back out on the streets until they kill someone. And then the gangs and these senseless killings, we've got to get aggressively at getting these people off the streets and not just wait till somebody kills senselessly. And this is a horrible tragedy, but we've got to get aggressive in these cities. And if the local elected officials are not going to, we've got to change some state laws to keep these people behind bars. It's not working. The release of these people time and time again. One 17-year-old was arrested 61 times before he spent a night in the jail. The commander in the 8th District in New Orleans told me this when we were working on the plan together to make the French Quarter safe. He has since left and took a job in Alaska because of his frustration with not keeping these people behind bars. How many times can you ask a police officer to arrest someone and they see them out the next day? It's not working that way. We've got to keep them locked up and keep the citizens safe.
Yeah, bond is so low that some of these people accused of felonies, serious crimes, using guns, they can post $30,000 and be out on the streets in a matter of hours.
I don't know how some of these judges and people that get them out live with themselves because they use a gun four or five times in a robbery, and until they kill somebody, they don't spend any real time in jail. I'd hate to have to be the one making that decision, but I surely would make sure they are rehabilitated, however long that takes, before they're back on the street sticking a gun in people's face until they pull mm-hmm. the trigger. That's unacceptable.
All right, a listener, this is Tracy at the Capitol asking about the latest controversy regarding the mayor of New Orleans about the first-class trips and not repaying the city. Your thoughts?
Well, I spend tax dollars like it was my own money. When I fly long distances, I do fly first class, but I pay for it. And I pay for my dinners and meals, and because I always think of my elected officials, I wouldn't want them spending my tax dollars. So I do think no public official should fly first class on the taxpayers' back. I think that's we should take the cheapest flight and always spend tax dollars as if they were owned in the best way. And so I think it just sends the wrong message on what we're doing with tax dollars. And I agree with the public outcry about anybody flying first class and paying for it with tax dollars.
I mentioned going into our show that Paul Arrigo, today's his last day at Visit Baton Rouge. You two have been on the same team promoting tourism. I'm sure you know Paul a bit.
What a champion, not only for tourism, for Baton Rouge, for the LSU Tigers. You know, that's why we've had the record-breaking tourism year, 7 years in a row prior to COVID. And that's why we're well on our way close to getting back to those record-breaking years because of people like Paul. His love and passion for Louisiana, for Baton Rouge, is second to none. He has been a champion. He has been a partner. He inspires me to do better and do more. And we have people like that all over Louisiana. But surely he is going to be irreplaceable. Jill, his replacement, will do a great job. She's been ahead of the Tourism Association around the state. And she's got big shoes to fill. She'll do a great job. But we will never have another Paul Arrigo. His personality is larger than life, and I hope he stays around and stays involved because he will surely be missed in the tourism industry.
Well, Governor, thanks for your monthly visit, and we look forward to seeing you in October and keep up your work for the state of Louisiana. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great weekend.
You too. And a reminder that this is an opportunity to get in during the Fall Member Fest. We only do this twice a year, and we don't do it for that many days, so we'd like to hear from you, and the phone lines are ready for your voice to be heard on the other side at 855 893-9753. You can also go to WRKF.org. And a reminder that if you contribute right now, you'll get the Orange Ceramic Morning Edition Bowl, $10 a month, $120 a year, and you'll know you've done your good deed and you'll be part of the WRKF family, about 4,000 strong, many of whom will be at the Founders Luncheon today at the Crown Plaza. Steve Roberts, guest on our show a few days ago, is the keynoter. So we want you to be part of our family. You become a stockholder, and I listen to everybody who calls and emails, but I take it really personally when a member contacts me and either has a bone to pick with me or a pat on the back. It's always great to hear from WRKF members. And some of you I know have been in that number for 42 years when the station started in 1980. And Eric DeWeese will be with us for part of Monday's show, the founder of WRKF. But we'd like to hear from you right now at 855-893-9753. We're back with Paul Arrigo, his last day at Visit Baton Rouge, right after this. This is Jim Inkster. It's a great pleasure to be with you and to have in studio on his final day as the head of Visit Baton Rouge. One Paul Arrigo, 20 years at the helm, 25 years with VBR, and 48 years in the tourism industry. He got in the game after his graduation from the University of New Orleans by way of Brother Martin. So he just went down Elysian Fields and got 2 degrees, and he has the distinction of being a graduate of both of those entities after they changed their names. First class in both cases, right?
That's right.
Brother Martin, which used to be Koryesu.
Koryesu, right? And St. Aloysius, and of course, University of New Orleans was Louisiana State University, New Orleans, LSUNO.
Mm-hmm. I remember. It was a military base before that.
It was, I think, Camp Leroy Johnson. And we had some of the original buildings that we had classes in.
And who would have thought this kid from New Orleans, who is the quintessential New Orleanian, mm-hmm. would end up spending most of your life in Baton Rouge?
Well, first of all, I spent most of my life outside of New Orleans. I'm 70 years old. I left New Orleans when I was 35. Of course, I lived in D.C. area for 9 years and then coming here. So, like you mentioned earlier, you know, you just can't get all of that New Orleans attitude or accent out of my system.
You changed your name, kind of.
Yeah, I did. That's an interesting story. As you know, when I was at that time, Koryesu, playing freshman football, coach named Andy Bourgeois, Chinese bandit, kept yelling at me how slow I was. Arrigo, I'm going to time you with an hourglass. And I didn't want to stop and say, pardon me, coach, it's Arrigo. So it became Arrigo in high school and stayed that way.
It stuck. And he stuck with us. And his legacy is immense. He is 70 years old. And I asked him what's next. And he says, I'm going to mow my grass.
You know, I have no long-term plans, Jim. There's enough to do. You know, I'll do some volunteer work. I'll help some people out. I don't want to be a paid consultant because that's a job, and I've got a job if I wanted to keep this one. So I'm just looking on to moving on to do some things that I haven't been able to do.
Okay. When you were hired in 2002 as the big chief, as I recall, it was not a resounding vote. You barely got in, didn't you?
It was a 5-4 vote. And had we had the 10th board member there, it probably would have been 5-5, which means I would not have made it. It was a time when I think there were some concerns about the process that bringing a number two up to number one, although I think I was well qualified. And I think that some people were just a little bit upset that they didn't have a say in it. Of course, this was totally different this time around with Jill Kidder when the board went out to through a committee and brought in some outside stakeholders and mm-hmm. local stakeholders and what have you. So it was a rough couple of years because I think people came up to me and said, you're going to have a hard time. And I said, really? And they were the ones that made it hard, yeah. But I think every mm-hmm. city has its share of what I call self-anointed, mm-hmm. and we certainly have our share.
Well, you have a beautiful office downtown, corner of 3rd and Laurel.
Yep.
And it's a better job now than the one you received in 2002, and that's largely through the efforts of you and your staff. What's been your biggest accomplishment in your view?
Recruiting, keeping, training, mentoring, leading a passionate staff. Staff is the number one asset we have, Jim. And then there's some other things that we had some success with. I mean, obviously all the big events and what have you, but purchasing the building on 3rd and Laurel was a big step. Bringing in all of the sporting events that we had, Garth Brooks, what have you. I mean, the staff has just been so very, very, very supportive.
877-217-5757. And the downtown area has blossomed with Visit Baton Rouge. I worked there for many years, and there wasn't much going on, and now it's a bustling place.
A lot of activity going on right now. A lot has to do with the hotel rooms downtown. Just a couple of minutes before I came over here this morning, we had the inaugural cruise of Viking dock in Baton Rouge, and that's a major accomplishment.
Well, it is a town that attracts visitors, despite the fact that New Orleans is an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
Is it difficult to compete with New Orleans?
We don't compete with New Orleans. We cooperate with New Orleans. A lot of the international visitors that come through New Orleans come up through Baton Rouge, and when people make more than a couple-day visit, Baton Rouge, Lafayette are included in our itineraries. When it comes to conferences, we go after different size, different type organizations than New Orleans does. And, you know, it's a different market, but we do work well with New Orleans and the other state cities and throughout the state.
What about the proposed rail line? A listener asked about this. This is Tom on Bluebonnet. We've talked about it for years. Supposedly, we're getting close to Baton Rouge and New Orleans, connecting the two in that way. Would that be a plus?
I'm going to wait and see if there's ever a study done to determine the exchange of wealth or economics. How much money from New Orleans is going to come up here, and how much money from Baton Rouge is going to go down?
We know the answer to
that. And then, you know, from a personal point of view, it would be a great opportunity to go down to New Orleans and have a good time and what have you. I am concerned about the exchange of economy between and the impact on Baton Rouge Airport.
It didn't take long, but another listener has jumped on that, and this is Gus. I don't know if it's Gustavo or a guy named Gus, but he and it's certainly not my friend and mentor Gus Weil, who's been gone for 4 years. Mm-hmm. But apparently the plan is to have one of the stops at the New Orleans airport, but Absolutely. There's no plan to have one at the Baton Rouge airport.
Well, what concerns me is that, you know, we have challenges with Baton Rouge Airport because of its proximity to New Orleans, and what impact will it have on the Baton Rouge airport? I think if we can truly connect the Baton Rouge community with the airport in New Orleans, then you've got a international destination, but I'd like to see what the impact's going to be on both ways. I really would.
Well, for some people, as we know, they work in one city and live in the other. I would think that would be a great benefit. And I miss the Louisiana Swift. I think I did that one time, but some people really benefited from that bus ride to New Orleans. And back, it was $10, wasn't it?
Right. I think there's one right now that runs from downtown to New Orleans, which is even less than that. It's called...
Really?
Yeah.
Why hasn't that been promoted more?
I don't know if there's such demand, you know, for that. I think
people don't like riding the bus anymore.
I think people have a love affair with cars, Jim, with their own
you
cars.
Think?
You know, yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
You think?
I mean, you don't. We don't even have a high occupancy of vehicle HOV lanes. You know, like we had when I was.
How many of those electric stations do we have there? Right there on Convention Street, or it's on Lafayette Street.
Yeah.
How many do we have?
Probably four or five, and then four I know you've got a bunch out at the library.
Story. The other night, I was downtown. I got there about 10:30. I parked my car, and I parked at one of those stations. Of course, there were no cars at the other stations. I came out at about 11:15, and I had a ticket. Somebody wrote me a ticket at 11 o'clock at night, Paul Arrigo. That's not good for tourism.
Well, you know, Jim, if you break the law, you got to face
that's right.
The
right. If you do the time,
that's right.
If you do the crime, you got,
there was no other parking spaces. Jim?
There were other parking spots, but I was arrogant. Like ergo, I was arrogant.
I understand. Just like people park in our lot,
and you know what? I'm going to pay the ticket.
You've got to.
Well, yeah, I'm guilty. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Phil. Good. Hi, Jim. And you are world-class, Mr. Inkster. I want to say that the whole world, you could work anywhere, my friend, and you work here. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Love you, too.
Well, there was a hub in New Orleans when I was a child where the Amtrak came. I mean, the train came, the passenger station. It had a train station, a Greyhound bus station, and it was a real nice area on Loyola, the library, and now there are those streetcar lines that are running again. It would be great to have like more of a mass transit system that really worked. Thank you.
Dr. Arrigo?
Yeah, I think there's some attributes of having a train run between downtown Baton Rouge and New Orleans, just like I was kind of hoping we would have got the streetcars from LSU to downtown Baton Rouge. Certainly some type of mass transit is needed, and we do have our share of traffic issues, and it's going to get worse in 2025.
You grew up in Gentilly.
Yep.
And you're very proud of it, as you should be. Mm-hmm. I lived on Fillmore Avenue for 9 years. Mm-hmm. What street did you grow up on?
One street was St. Denis, which is right across from the Parkway Commission, Dillard University. The other was Parger, which is right around the corner. And then I moved down to a street called Clover, which is on the other side of Franklin Avenue. Most of my life was on the land that my Sicilian grandparents farmed, and they built.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, they built shotgun doubles.
So New Orleans is in your, it's in your DNA.
Oh yeah, it is. It is, and certainly I've got a love for the community.
Well, we talked with Billy Nungesser about crime, and when you're advocating people coming to our city, whether it's Baton Rouge or New Orleans, you certainly want them to be safe and feel like they're safe. Mm-hmm. But can you understand their concern?
Absolutely. And I will tell you this, Jim, we have been, and this is not sugarcoating anything, this is just a fact, we've been very fortunate that serious crime like that has not affected our visitors. I think in my tenure here, 20 some odd years, I think there was a German tourist that was murdered one of the hotels on Airline Highway maybe 20 years ago. But the visitor, maybe because of, you know, we don't have obviously the number or the mm-hmm. congregation of visitors that New Orleans has, but as terrible as crime is to a community, we have not felt the impact as much as a city like New Orleans has.
877-217-5757, another quarter hour with the impeccable and incomparable Paul Arrigo. Last day on the job after 25 years at Visit Baton Rouge. We're back with more Talk Louisiana after this.
Molino and the voice of Louisiana Agriculture Radio Network Studios, powered by Louisiana Propane. At the Board of Trade this hour, soybean futures higher, November 14, 13 and three quarters up.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and a reminder that also this is Fall Member Fest time. Whatever you can contribute, whether it's a dollar or 10 or 20 or 200 or 2,000, we want to hear from you if you're so inclined. And please give us a call at 855-893-9753. Paul Arrigo with us for the home stretch of Talk Louisiana. We're honored that he is logging his final day, the morning of it, at Visit Baton Rouge, which turned 50 last year. He's logging it with us, and Paul has been with that group, that organization, for half of its lifetime in the last 20 years as the leader, the director. And he has left quite a mark. A listener asks, if we're not competing with New Orleans, which cities does Baton Rouge compete with?
Well, I think when it comes to conventions, Mobile, Jackson, Shreveport,
Little Rock.
Little Rock, absolutely. You know, other capital cities. We've done well with conventions because that's the way I focused on pursuing conferences and conventions. When it comes to visitors, you know, a visitor selects an area, and it when you look at South Louisiana, the brand that we have, we cooperate with Lafayette, New Orleans to bring those visitors in for extended stay. And the lieutenant governor's done a great job of having the city cooperate. But just like North Louisiana connects well with, you know, Shreveport and Monroe. So from a convention point of view, cities in similar, Madison, Wisconsin, Mobile was at one time very, very competitive. Jackson, to a certain extent, Memphis to a certain extent, the cities along those lines.
Do you plan on staying in Baton Rouge?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is home now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I lived 9 years in the Washington, D.C. area, Northern Virginia, which would be my second choice to go back.
What part of the city do you live?
Here?
Yes.
Bluebonnet Perkins.
Okay. Well, as you know, we have logged years on enhancing Government Street, gentrifying, and then when a murder takes place there in front of these pristine new buildings designed mm-hmm. to spur activity, we get carried away. And a listener notes correctly. In fact, I've gotten a few emails over the last few weeks about the fact that it was a white LSU student. It gets more attention than if it were a black Southern student killed on Harding Boulevard, and that unfortunately is true.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it is that we have really, really put a lot of emphasis on Government Street, and then somebody gets killed at the railroad tracks. That's not good for tourism.
No, it isn't. And it's the idea that that perception is reality. And we've done a lot downtown to make downtown vibrant, like you said. And I think Mid-City was starting to move in that direction, particularly Government Street. And I drive down Government Street pretty often. I think it's a pretty eclectic and cool retail along Government. And when something like that happens to a young student, and it's devastating, and it's just rocks. And at what point, like the lieutenant governor said, at what point are we going to do something?
Here's a question, and I don't think this person is intending to stir anything up, but it's a good question. What's the legacy of Bob Dean? You knew him. He did some good things before he got into his recent trouble.
You know, Bob Dean's office, one of his buildings was next to ours, and we've see him on occasion. I met Bob several times and talked to him, and we've actually, one of our parking lots was one of his properties. I think Bob Dean has done some interesting things and good things for downtown. I think a lot of other people have done some good things for downtown. We need a vibrant downtown. We need retail downtown. We need residential mm-hmm. to, and obviously the hotels are helping. It's sad that Bob Dean, his legacy will be the way it is over the last mm-hmm. year, because it was about a year ago that
Well, I remember he was our landlord, when I was working downtown at the State National Life Building mm-hmm. for many years, and a nice oil painting of Bob in the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
Did a great job making that lobby look fantastic, but there had to be an oil painting of one Robert Dean on the wall. That was a nice touch.
Oh, yeah.
Some people didn't like it, though. But he left a mark, a Commerce Building. Next door to you. Wasn't he involved with the resurgence of that?
Across the street, I think he was. And then, of course, it was taken over by Derek Fish, I think. Mm-hmm. You don't know who owns, who develops, but that's certainly a vibrant area there with the mm-hmm. retail, with the vintage downstairs. There's a lot of activity, a health spa up in there. So there's an awful lot of activity. And Mathern's, I mean, Mathern's is probably the single biggest influencer on action downtown, activity downtown, next to the hotels.
Yeah, I mentioned Gus Weil a little while ago, and I remember he was advising Bob Dean at one point. And one day I'm coming out of my office there on 3rd Street out of the State National Life Building, and there's Gus and Bob Dean right there in the window, and Gus says to him, he goes, you need to take all of these properties and call them Deanopolis and put it in the window here. And Bob did it. Yeah, that's how it started. A listener also asked, good question, what about the legacy of one Davis Rohrer, who was your partner in crime for many years?
You know, I miss Davis. I really do. Davis was so I think we shared a lot of passion. Davis would get things done, and I miss Davis, and I think we were together. Davis was a little bit ahead of me on his influence on Baton Rouge, but I think we were together during those years when things really started to happen, and I can remember the big things that we would celebrate. But that at that time seems so big.
Got another listener who wants to know about Kip Holden. He certainly was a big part in helping you, I think.
Yeah, Kip, Mayor Holden was so involved in what we did and positively in what we did. And I think he thoroughly enjoyed the industry. I remember it was a cold day in January. I was the offices were all shut down because of freeze and no water and what have you. And I was outside doing something, and I get a phone call from the mayor, and he said, come see me tomorrow. We're going to get the Miss USA pageant to Baton Rouge, because he was very involved in that. And I said, okay, Mayor, we'll do it. And he loved every moment of it. And just a great partner in what we did.
Mm-hmm. I used to see the mayor out on the town.
He used to enjoy the activities in Baton Rouge. And you know,
usually with a Budweiser. And
always so. With a Budweiser. And, you know, one thing about the mayor, he was very, very, very brand loyal. He would only drink Budweiser. I mean, I remember we went to up to Milwaukee to get the bowlers conference back there, the bowling the tournament back to Baton Rouge, and I ran into a store and I bought not regular Budweiser. It was
some Bud Light or something.
Yeah, it wasn't Bud Light, but it was some Bud product that could easily be confused with regular Budweiser. He looked at it and said, go back and get the Budweiser. I said, okay, Mayor.
He had to have his Budweiser. Yep. And unfortunately, the former mayor is not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember there was a lot of gnashing of teeth. He had 24-hour security, and he was on the town a lot, mm-hmm. as we know. And today, I think any mayor is going to have security forevermore, unfortunately. There was a time when mayors like Pat Screen, for example, used to roam the streets without a guard in view, but now that's not the case anymore.
Jim, I just flew back from Washington yesterday. On Wednesday, I went up, and I sat next to a gentleman. We started talking, and I said, well, what do you do? He said, I'm the mayor of Atlanta. We got on, and he was by himself. Now, whether his security was elsewhere or not, I don't know. But he had this perfect seat right by the door so that everybody that came in would see him. And he was just, boy, he was glad. He reminded me a lot of Mayor Holden.
Well, Mayor Holden was a showman. I remember going with him. And I'll admit, I was one of the guests in his suite at Bayou Country Superfest. And remember, he refused to list the people who were in the suite. I sat next to Sean Connery's son that night, Connery.
Yes.
But it was funny because all these white folks in cowboy hats wanted their photos taken with the mayor of Baton Rouge, who was, he was a black man and an urban fella, and it was beautiful.
You know, that's one of the things that I never could understand about when we brought in Country Fest, how this big demand to want to know who was in the suites. Many of in our suites were clients that we were trying to bring conventions to. Now, New Orleans gets thousands of events, Country Fest type, and I don't remember any request to want to know who. And above that, now you got me going, Jim. The criticism we received by spending, quote, tax money to bring in Country Fest and other events, that's what Visit Baton Rouge does. It's no different than buying ads in The Advocate or on this radio station. It's to promote tourism, and that's what we do. And this city, for some reason, just had this fetish about that.
Should LSU and Southern play every year?
Absolutely.
Wasn't that beautiful?
You know, it was without doubt, because I was there in 2003 when we had the two bands play on the state capitol. It was historic, and I think it's something that we need to do, because I think these two great universities, higher learning, need to come together closer.
Well, Paul Arrigo, let's stay in touch. Thank you for your work for this city.
Jim, thank you for helping us so much and being an ambassador in your friendship, and we'll stay in touch.
Well, we'll have you back very soon. I hope you'll have time on your hands, so let's do it. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Stay safe and stay tuned.